Good evening and welcome to Radio Edutalk. This is David Noble and Doug Etibay as ever, and I'm delighted this evening to welcome to the show Anne Glennie of The Learning Zoo. Good evening, Anne.
Hello, David.
It's great to have you on the show, and this evening we're going to be talking about teaching children to read and write and all things associated. And if you're listening to a live show and you'd like to get in touch with myself or Anne over the next 20 to 30 minutes or so, then you can email edutalker, that's edutalkr at hotmail.co.uk, or if you're on Twitter you can pop something up, and I know that Anne's on Twitter as well, so if you include the hashtag edutalk, then you'll be able to get your comments or questions through in that way. So without further ado, Anne, could you just give us a brief background to your career in education and then give us a flavour of the work that you're involved in at the moment?
Well, I suppose that most people that know me will know that I'm a primary teacher to trade. But most recently, well, for the last 5 years, I've been mainly a big writing consultant and trainer, so visiting schools across Scotland doing that. What most people won't know about me is that actually, originally, my degree was in English, and my original intention was always to be a secondary teacher. However, when you're busy making plans, life happens, and that's not the way things worked out in the end. More recently, just at the end of 2014, I started my own literacy consultancy, which is The Learning Zoo. And again, anyone that knows me will know why. It's because, well, I love learning, but I love animals as well. So through The Learning Zoo, I currently offer two courses. They focus on both aspects of reading. So we have reflective reading. That one focuses on comprehension, on cultivating a reading culture and embedding the higher order thinking skills into the teaching of reading. My other course, it's just newly launched, it's Phonics Forever. And as the title would suggest, it concentrates on phonics, and it's all about how we should be teaching children to read, write and spell properly from the beginning. And it's informed by current research, so it's entirely up to date, and it's what people should be aiming for in their settings if they're looking to improve attainment.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much, Anne. I've had a look at your website, and certainly it gets across your love of animals. It's a beautifully simple website. It's very eye-catching, and of course you have your blog kind of embedded in the website.
That's right.
Yeah, and I suppose maybe to start off with, then you've been blogging about some of your thoughts regarding the recent survey within Scottish education around, in particular, literacy. So this is the Scottish Survey on Literacy and Numeracy, the results that were published recently. So can you give us an idea about your kind of opinions or your take on the results, maybe by starting off by giving a bit of context about what the survey is and actually how the data came about?
Well, obviously, every 2 years, the surveys are carried out, and each alternate year, they look at maths and then they look at literacy. So the results from last year have just been published there at the end of April. And to say that they're disappointing is really an understatement, particularly as, you know, I really feel teachers have been working so hard on curriculum for excellence. We really feel like we're making inroads. This is almost just like a kick in the teeth. You're working so hard, but then the results are not supporting that hard work that's going on there. So extremely disappointing and pretty upsetting to have to realise we're in a position where things aren't actually working for us, and we need to, I think, to be honest, the results need to be taken as a real wake-up call. We need to start looking urgently, reviewing what we're doing for literacy currently in our schools, and trying to see where we go from here.
Now, am I right in saying, Anne, that the, and you know, been like many of the busy teachers, I've not had time to read the report as yet. So it measures reading, writing, talking and listening, as I understand it, and it's it kind of three different stages within a kind of pupil's early school career.
Yes,
so did the data show that, and I know there are different cohorts clearly, at the particular year groups, but the attainment or the levels have fallen across the board, is that right?
Well, to give you a wee flavour, the current results, and yes, you're totally right, it's reading, writing, listening and talking. The ones that I'm particularly interested in, though, of course, are the reading ones. So the current results, as published in reading, are as follows. Now, this is for 2014. In primary 4, 78% of children are performing well at or very well at the level in reading. In primary 7, 88% of children are performing well at or very well at the level in reading. And in S2, 80% of children are performing well at or very well at the level in reading. Now, when we refer to levels there, obviously, when we're talking about P4, we're talking about the end of first level. P7, we're talking about the end of second level. And S2, we're talking about the end of third level there. So the first thing I have to say about these results is I think they're quite misleading. Because for me, to be honest, if you've been on first level for 3 or 4 years, we should really be hoping that you're doing very well at that level. So as you approach the end of primary 4, as you're looking towards beginning second level, really, we should be aiming to have all of our children doing very well. Now, if we look at how many children are doing very well, if we isolate those figures, it then changes to 40% of P4s, 56% of P7s, and 41% of S2s. Compare that to 2 years ago, the results were higher. It was 45%, 60%, and 45%. So there's a drop across the board there for everybody in terms of results. They make for really uncomfortable reading.
And one of your arguments, as I understand it, Anne, is that you feel that the curriculum is a little too cluttered, shall we say, in that you mentioned at the top of the show that the teachers are very busy and will be maybe increasingly stressed by these results in a national context. But one of your arguments would be that we need to declutter the curriculum and focus more on kind of explicit time for learning and teaching, or I think you use the phrase consecutive practice around the likes of reading.
I think so. I think with Curriculum for Excellence, we're trying to do it all. We want it all for our children. We want to make it all happen. But really, that can't be at the expense of our basic skills. I view primary school that our main job is to ensure that children leave us. You know, we've got 7 years with our children. They need to be reading, they need to be writing, they need to be counting before they leave us. And if we are not doing that, those are the basics, the minimum. If we're not doing that, then we're not doing our job, because then what's going to happen when they go to secondary school? Secondary school teachers don't have the time, the knowledge to be able to, you know, to make up for that. You know, if we've got 7 years, we need to make sure we're covering those things and doing it properly. And I think because teachers want to do well, they want it all for their children, we're trying hard to make Curriculum for Excellence happen. We're in effect trying to tick all of the boxes, whether that's eco schools, enterprise, fair trade councils, pupil councils, outdoor learning. There is so much to consider. And your curriculum becomes very crushed. And I know that teachers certainly feel, because I'm out in school for my work a lot of the time, and they're saying to me, you know, we've never felt more constrained than we do now. And that's not what Curriculum for Excellence is supposed to be about. We're supposed to feel, I keep saying to people, can you feel the freedom in your classroom? But nobody can feel it. And mm-hmm. But they feel the pressure of everything else, and I do think these results are adding to it. So mm-hmm. Yes, I mean, what I've seen in some schools is head teachers being very brave and saying, do you know what, let's focus on this until we get it right, and taking some of that pressure off, taking some of the items, if you like, off of the teacher's plates to allow them to focus and get these basic things right first of all. So yeah, that's one of the things that I believe mm-hmm. is a real problem, the clutter of the curriculum.
Mm-hmm. I think you go further though, Anne, don't you, in the sense that you know, if there's more time, if there's more focus, maybe directing instruction around, for example, reading, then it's not enough for there to be a kind of mixed methods approach, as you claim to be out there in large parts of Scotland, I assume, that we should be focusing on phonics or particular approaches to phonics, is that right?
Well, yes, I suppose there's two things wrapped up in that. The first thing is, yes, I do believe that when it comes to basic skills, we need to give the time to ensure that that core learning is happening. And the best way for that to happen is through daily core practice on consecutive days. Now, that's not to say that I'm not all for all of the wonderful things I've just mentioned, like outdoor learning or enterprise or finance education. But there's ways of building those into your week, whether that's on a Thursday afternoon and we do it in our own programme, or whether once a term we have 2 weeks out off timetable for interdisciplinary learning and we address it in that way.
And just looking at another aspect of your writing on the blog, Anne, is about the actual, I suppose, the structure of Curriculum for Excellence as well. And you're talking about in your opinion, that easing those are not useful, but you actually said that they can be misleading and damaging. Again, you've talked about it in terms of the actual levels and the 4 years within level one. But I don't know if this is a step too far, Anne, but you're saying that the E's and O's should actually be removed and something else should come in their place?
I see where you're picking up there on the E's and O's and what I think about them. I actually quite like the E's and O's. I wouldn't want to replace them with anything. Where I say that they can be damaging is, in fact, in exact reference to the teaching of reading. Because the E's and O's, because they are very general by their nature, they're not giving you enough information. So the information that it does give you, teachers are, if you like, holding on to that for grim death, because that's the only information we've got. However, when it comes to reading, and as I just mentioned, your sight words, your multi-cueing strategies, your guessing. I mean, phonics is in there, but it's mentioned as only one of many strategies that could be used. And what I'm suggesting, which for many people will be, you know, a bit of a shock, is that instead of having, I use strategies, plural, in Curriculum for Excellence, it should be, I have one strategy for reading, and that strategy is using phonics to decode. It's using phonics all the way through the word for reading and for spelling. I don't need to guess, because I know I've got all my sounds and I can use all of my sounds, because I can see the graphemes or the letters and I can see the sounds. So I can read any word you put in front of me. I don't need a picture. I don't have to guess. I don't need to make it up. I don't need to pretend. I can use the clues that are actually there in front of me. This, I know for many people listening, is a very difficult idea to understand. But ultimately, it comes back to probably my biggest problem and my biggest issue. And that is that actually we're not teaching our teachers how to teach reading, which, when you think about it, it's just absolutely crazy. It's the nuts and bolts. It's the bread and butter of what we do every day at school. Mm-hmm. If you can't read, you can't access the curriculum. You can't unlock literature, you can't unlock learning, you can't love reading. Everything is closed if you can't read.
Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering, I know you're saying about you know, the likes of initial teacher education. I mean, we have, mm-hmm. you know, there's a literacy hubs, which I must admit I don't know too much about, but I've heard repeatedly mentioned the Standing Literacy Commission and such like. So, and you know, surely the teacher education programmes have all been revamped, particularly you know, in light of recent reports, and there's meant to have been great developments there. You know, are you absolutely certain that there's not great improvements within initial teacher education, or is that, again, is it the same constraints that or similar constraints that actually in-service teachers are finding?
Well, I think, first of all, the issue surrounding the sort of teacher training thing is, it's a bit like at home when I'm saying, you know, who fed the dog? You know, at the end of the day, when somebody says, did you feed the dog its dinner? Oh, I didn't. I thought you were doing it. Oh, I didn't do it either because I thought you were doing it. It's a bit like that when it comes to teacher training. Everyone thinks it's someone else's responsibility. Now, universities, understandably, they've got a lot to cram in. They know that when students or probationers go out into their schools, that they'll have to adopt whatever the approach is that that school is using. So for them, it makes sense to let the school do that part. But then the school, for their part, well, they would quite like, actually, people to come from university with the latest findings, with the latest research, with the latest methods on teaching, reading and what will work. Because, to be honest with you, in Scotland, we're led by, not by research, but by resources. And any primary teacher will tell you, you know, or we'll use this scheme or we'll use that scheme or we'll go to the cupboard and we'll get these reading books. And this is not just me, you know, making it up. It's not just anecdotal. In the 2014 review of the Scottish Government Literacy Hub approach, it's actually mentioned in there that there was a worrying mix of knowledge and understanding of the pedagogy of reading by students on placement and newly qualified teachers. When asked, those interviewed reported that too many student teachers and those just qualified did not have a confident working knowledge of the pedagogy of reading. This has been suggested in the past on an anecdotal basis and does seem to have some foundation. It is clearly a very concerning suggestion and one that requires further discussion with universities involved in initial teacher education. So that's not me, that's real real evidence there, if you like. But I would go further and suggest that this is an issue that is not just confined to new teachers or students. This is an issue that affects every teacher in education in Scotland, because I can deliver to a room of people, I can ask for a show of hands about how many people were taught how to teach reading when they trained to be a teacher. And honestly, a very generous estimate would be that 10% of people would put their hands up. Now, of that 10%, you'll get some people who, in the nicest possible way, they're approaching retirement, they trained a long time ago. You'll get other people who have trained elsewhere, somewhere exotic, usually England, where they do cover how to teach reading. So this is a real, very real and very widespread problem. It's something I've written to the government about twice now. The last letter I got back explained to me that it's the GTC that are responsible for the content and inspection of teacher education programmes in Scotland. But my other real worry is that we are falling behind, because meanwhile, where we lack that pedagogical subject knowledge and how to take reading forward in the most effective way, meanwhile, our closest neighbours in England, well, since 2006, they've had it written into their teacher standards that if teaching early reading, teachers should demonstrate a clear understanding of systematic synthetic phonics. That requirement within their teacher standards means that, in turn, their teacher education institutes are having to ensure that they are teaching this knowledge to their students. But not only that, as of last September 2014, when the new curriculum was introduced into England, it also became a statutory requirement. So it's actually the law that every school in England must teach every child to read through systematic synthetic phonics. And by that, it means that you use phonics as the only way to decode. So in England, that means guessing is out, sight words are out, multi-cue strategies are also out. So if you like, we're falling to the back of the class if we don't address this now. The real irony, though, for me is why have England and other countries changed their policy and practice so radically? Well, it's based on research that came from Scotland. It's based on the stuff from Clackmannanshire, from West Dumbartonshire. The huge report, the Rose Review as it's known in England, it's a huge report, hugely influential in England, but it devotes 5 full pages about what the team led by Sir Jim Rose learned when they came to Scotland and witnessed exemplary phonics teaching and exemplary results that were, of course, supported by the longitudinal studies as well at St Andrews University. So this is a sorry state of affairs, and I don't quite know how we've ended up here. We don't seem to have learned the lessons from our own research.
I'm just wondering, Anne, from the distance at which I'm gazing at all of this, whether it's to do with kind of localism, that we're trying to empower local authorities, head teachers, etc., class teachers as autonomous professionals, and saying, well, you know your class, you know the needs mm-hmm. of your class, and therefore maybe there's an assumption that, you know, or a trust there that, you know, you will find your own way to the successful methods. But you would argue that that's not possible because, you know, systematic synthetic phonics, as you would claim or would say that the evidence bears out, you know, actually works for everyone, and that you don't need to take into account the particular nature of the young people you work with.
Well, of course, I understand where we're coming from on this, and I'm not suggesting, I don't want to be tied up in knots as they are in England, where things can be extremely prescriptive and you've got no room for manoeuvre. So I'm not saying we need to go down that route, but honestly, to continually focus on this sort of local context and local solutions, or as I like to call it, local shops for local people, we're missing a trick, because we're all reinventing the wheel within our own authorities. And actually, the context of learning English is common to everyone in an English-speaking country, or common to everyone even that wants to learn English. So to pretend that there's something different or something that separates us here, there isn't. And in England, we can learn from what they're doing in England, because we can see from their results the impact that that's having. And whether that's with children who are on the free school meals, if you like. There are schools in England who have huge levels of deprivation, but they're still seeing amazing results. So, for example, I've got a school here in London, Carwen Primary School. It's in the east of London. And if you compare that with our SSLN results, so at the end of year 6, so equivalent for us is the end of P7, 98% of children are achieving it's what they would call a level 4. So for us, that's equivalent to a secure second level or our old level D. So imagine that, 98%. Now, that school in east of London, it serves its children, its intake, 55% are disadvantaged pupils. 67% of the pupils that attend that school have English as a second language. But yet, despite those barriers, despite those circumstances, despite that context, which is specific to them, this 98%, that's down to systematic synthetic phonics.
And apologies to listeners and to yourself, Anne, that 24 minutes into the show, I'm asking you for a bit more kind of definition about systematic synthetic phonics and how it actually works kind of day to day in the classroom. So apologies, I should have asked earlier on. Now, my own experience, I would guess it's kind of linked in with the Oxford Reading Tree, etc. But are you okay? Again, pardon my ignorance, just explaining a bit more about how it all works.
No worries. And that's the thing. And, you know, I'll be really honest here. I'm telling you all this stuff now, but I only know it now because I identified this as a development priority for myself. I often thought, did I miss the lecture where we did this? Did I sleep in that day where they talked about this? Because there is a significant amount of terminology that you need to know to be able to talk about this stuff. But at a very basic level, we call it the alphabetic principle. The English language is made up of sounds or phonemes, if you want to call them that. And phonemes are the smallest units of sound. And within English, we have around 44 plus phonemes, or these smallest units of sound. And it's basically how we teach those to children. We start off by teaching them, if you like, a simple code. So in the most simple terms, it would be, today we are learning, and let me show you, this is how we write, and I'll show you on the board. This is the grapheme, or this is a letter. Every time you want to write, this is the way we write it down. And that's at its most basic level. So we start with the sounds, and we map the sounds to the letters or to the graphemes, because children need to learn that when we write stuff down, it's not disconnected to our speech. The stuff we're writing down is exactly what comes from our speech. It starts with talking. It doesn't start with writing, it starts with talking. So that's why we start with the sounds. Some teachers may be familiar with analytic phonics, and there used to be lots of arguments about which was best. Analytic phonics used to be popular in Scotland, so that would start, for example, with a whole word, and then it would break it down from there. But systematic synthetic phonics is all about blending. So if I know the sounds, for example, k, a, t, I can blend those together to say cat. But if I also know those sounds, if I want to write down cat, well, I can break it back down. The code is reversible. It works in the opposite direction. So if I want to write down cat, I need to work out, well, how many sounds does it have? K, at, cat, k, at. I can use it to then write it down. So teaching children that that code is reversible, and it's about teaching them the code in a very systematic, step-by-step manner. What we often do in school is we might teach that simple code, for example, at a very basic level, let's say at the level of the alphabet. But we need to go much further than that, because we need to teach all of the spelling alternatives that exist in English as well. So although we have these 44 plus speech sounds, we've only got 26 letters to use to show those sounds. And our spelling is incredibly complicated. English is the most complex language to learn in the world, which means children need a lot of support, need a lot of help to do it. And we can't do it in a mixed up way. We've got to do it in a very clear, logical way. Otherwise, children will get left behind. And that's what's currently happening in our schools. We're not doing it in small enough steps. We're not doing it clearly enough, in a manner that everyone can learn as they go.
And I suppose this is where your Phonics Forever CPD comes in, Anne. So can you say a bit more about it? And just with the young people that I work with, I would be fascinated to hear kind of the methodology, as well as maybe one or two success stories about where the approach is actually working with slightly older children. Maybe children who have had a kind of disrupted education previously, for example.
Well, the beauty of the approach is that it will work with anybody. So it can be beginning readers, it can be readers who are struggling at primary school, it can be secondary school, it can even be used with adults, because ultimately it's about learning just how our language works. So it's entirely straightforward. It depends, of course, on the programme that you decide to use or choose, because you need to be supported by resources when you want to teach this. But there are many programmes. For example, the one I'm very fond of is Phonics International, because it's been specifically designed to use with learners of any age. So although, of course, you've got the materials that might have for snake, with a picture of a snake, you equally have all of the materials that don't contain picture clues, that don't look babyish. Because we also need to address the issue that phonics is something for babies. Phonics is something for people just starting out. It's not. Phonics is lifelong adult stuff. And even though we are not aware of it, we still will use phonics. A simple example would be, if there is anyone still managing to listen to me just now in this muddle, if you write down now on a bit of paper and a post-it note the word that I'm about to tell you, and the word I'm going to tell you now is it's a medication, and the name of the medication is amitriptyline, and I want you to write down amitriptyline, amitriptyline, and then what did the wee voice in your head say to you? What did that wee running commentary say to you in your head? What did it say in your head, David, if you tried to write down amitriptyline?
The voice would say to me, take your time and break it down and sound it out.
Exactly. Sound it out. That's it, though. And that's what we do. We sound it out. We are using phonics. But if we then say to our children, let's say someone asking us how to spell a word, and or if I was saying to you, how did you spell it? You'd say to me, oh, it's A-M, blah, blah, blah. However, those letter names, that's simply a convention for spelling. We're missing out what actually goes on in the brain of someone who is spelling. You know, we'll say to children, oh, this is how you do it, A-M, but we haven't let them into the secret that actually in my brain, when I need to spell a new, unusual or a challenging word, I use my phonics knowledge too. So we need to change the perception of phonics. Parents need to know. It's not just baby stuff. Teachers at every stage need to know. It's not just baby stuff. But most importantly, our learners need to know. It's not just baby stuff, that it's for them too. And it's all about how our language works.
And it's been absolutely fascinating speaking with you this evening. And I'll finish up in maybe a couple of tough questions, but maybe give us a chance to hear a bit more about, you know, the changes that you feel need to happen. So, or I suppose maybe it's an opportunity to sum up for you as well. So again, go back to your blog. I think it is. You were kind of. You seem to be on a crusade, if you don't mind me saying, to I think tighten up our teaching and get the basics right, I think, in your own words. So can you say a bit more or just sum up about how we start to make moves in the right direction?
Well, as you've really summed it up there for me. I do think we need to tighten up our teaching. You know, when it comes to the attainment gap, we are trying a lot. We know we've got a problem. You know, we're throwing money at this. We've got the Attainment Challenge Fund. We've got Raising Attainment for All. We've got Play Talk Read. We've got free school meals. We're trying to attack this attainment gap from every angle. But the angle that we have not tried yet is simply tightening up the teaching. Because I truly believe that the answer to the attainment gap, to getting rid of the attainment gap, is with teaching. And regardless of a child's background or circumstances, you know, whether they're deprived through poverty, their postcode, their parents, or their pre-5 home and learning environment, regardless of that background, teaching should make the difference. Teaching should provide that level playing field, and education should provide that transformative power that our deprived children need the very most. But we're only going to be able to unlock that and do it if we know what we're talking about. So the very first thing people need to do is review what they're currently doing. If they don't have a recognised synthetic phonics programme in place, they need to get one. And if they do have one, they need to reflect on honestly, are they doing it properly? And does the programme they're using meet what is recommended by current research? And actually, I've got a wee thing here called Closing the Gap, a practical plan for schools. What I'll do is I can send it to you and you can put it up as a wee PDF link.
Yeah,
two pages for people. Because what I feel is there have been so many reports coming out. I mean, even in the last couple of weeks, there's been about 3 big reports. I've only got time to read them because I don't have a class anymore. Because if you've got a class, your every moment is devoted to looking after that class and their needs. You don't have time to read the stuff. But the real disappointing thing about all the reports is no one's telling you what you need to do. You know, everyone agrees that we need data, that we need to know what works, that we need to use, you know, research-informed practices. But you know what? no one's nailing their colours to the mast and telling you what those things are. So in these two pages, I'm nailing my colours to the mast and I'm telling you what they are, and hopefully that will provide us some practical help that schools desperately need.
That would be great, and we'll definitely pop that up along with the audio podcast. And if people want to get in touch with you directly, Anne, so there's a website, and you've also got quite a presence on Twitter, so do you want to just leave us with those contact details?
Yes, get in touch with me anytime. I'm always happy to help, always answer my emails and inquiries, even if I'm on the go or on the road. But you'll get me instantly on Twitter at Anne Glennie, all joined, lowercase. Or you'll find me on The Learning Zoo, and it's just www.thelearningzoo.co.uk.
Thanks again for joining us this evening.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
And to have you on the show again in the future, it would be fantastic.
That would be great.
So best wishes meantime. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.